The UN says that humanity stands on the brink of catastrophic man-made climate change. But is it true?
Not a chance. But we do stand on the brink of catastrophic government policies that threaten to ruin the nation our forefathers built and defended against tyranny.
So what drives the climate scare, Jay?
Besides simple ignorance, the scare is driven by corporate greed and the desire of government to control all aspects of our lives, Tom.
Is this part of something more sinister?
Indeed it is. Whether it's climate change or a pandemic or socialism, it really means sacrificing your rights and accepting the tyranny of the fourth branch of government, the bureaucracy. It must be stopped.
This is The Other Side of the Story with Dr. Jay Lair and Tom Harris of the International Climate Science Coalition.
We're told all the time now to stay woke. In fact, statues of our founding fathers and other symbols of our past are often being removed by authorities or smashed by vandals in support of wokeness. In today's program, Dr. Jay Lair and I will examine this phenomenon and try to understand woke's origin and where it's taking us. So Jay, tell us, what really is this woke thing?
Well, Tom, before I tell our audience what woke is, let me tell them it is one of the most insidious aspects of leftist life today. We're moving toward a war between the left and the right, and they are gaining a huge foothold. And things like woke and critical race theory that we're going to be discussing are more serious than anybody understands. So I hope that our audience will not only listen, but hopefully will guide friends to listen in. Dictionaries define woke as a perceived awareness of inequality or justice, normally of a racial nature. It has evolved with the advent of web-based social media. It extends to conversations on economics, social class, gender equality, and obviously politics. It generally involves activism, but attempts to always claim that a woke person is aware. I would claim that a woke person is said to have awakened to his or her surroundings, and so is now awoke, or poor grammar, shortened to woke, but it has to do with waking up to all the injustice around you.
Yeah, exactly. And here's a quote from the Black fashion designer, Kenya Hunt. She says, woke is also the much-needed awakening of the privileged to all manners of social ills and the willingness to call them out, usually in the form of a, this is a quote, a white cisgender heteronormative man, recognizing that others who are not white, cisgender, heteronormative, and male are often denied equal rights, treatment, and pay. Well, I didn't know what cisgender meant, and I don't think many people in the audience do either. So we looked it up, and it turns out cisgender refers to people who accept their gender as being their biological sex at birth, which to me seems kind of obvious. It's interesting, Jay, in Canada, the minorities, generally speaking, are treated better by the official establishment than white, heteronormative, cisgender men through something they call employment equity. And it's kind of ironic because when you apply for a job in the federal government, for example, you are given the option of filling in this form, which is trying to track visible minorities because, of course, they have quotas for visible minorities. It always struck me that when they have a form that says, you know, we're committed to employment equity, now tell us, you know, whether or not you are a blind, mentally handicapped native or something. I mean, that surely is the opposite of employment equity.
Yes, it absolutely is. In fact, there really is, Tom, such a thing as a woke meter. You can measure how woke people are. And of course, it helps to have more melanin in your skin. Black people get an edge. Gay people get an edge. Women who are black and gay, wow, they score very high. And the cisgender situation is if you claim to be a sex other than your biological sex, your score goes up and your chances of success in employment in this woke generation are increased. And it really is evil. We actually see it in President Biden's cabinet. If you were to look through the dozen or more cabinet members, it is astounding how different these people are. There are very few straight white males in the cabinet. I mean, a straight white male today is disadvantaged in today's society that is trying to install a woke philosophy.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting, Jay. You know, in Canada, I think a straight white male looking at the application form for a government job probably just throws it in the garbage, because if they don't check off any of the categories, then yeah, their chances of getting hired are pretty low. And you know, it's interesting. I was hearing some time ago that because of the quotas they have in different departments in the government about hiring people, as they approach the end of the quarter, if they haven't hit their quota, they have to purposely hire visible minorities preferentially. So if you're a visible minority, and nothing against visible minorities, I mean, it's great to use every opportunity to get a job. But those folks have incredible advantage in the last weeks of a quarter or a half or a year because they have to meet these quotas, you know, and you'd laugh, Jay. They had a form they sent around to the whole public service in Canada, which at the time when I worked for them a couple of decades ago was about 250,000 people. And on the form, you had to check if you were a member of any of the visible minorities. And in our particular department, which was Transport Canada Airworthiness, it was mostly white males and a lot of people from England, actually. I mean, it just happened to be the people who were qualified in aerospace for doing safety assessment. And so pretty well the whole department just threw these forms in the garbage. So I put in a suggestion award, which the government encourages you to do, to say, rather than send out 250,000 multicolored forms to everybody in the government, most of which end up in the garbage, why don't you just have the forms available with the admin officer so the visible minority can go pick up the forms if there are any in a particular department? And they answered me back saying, well, this would be a violation of the right to privacy because the visible minority person would have to reveal themselves as a visible minority. And so I wrote back and said, well, the fact that they're a visible minority means that it's visible. And they waited for a while because they didn't know how to answer that. And they finally said, well, the admin officer might not be at their desk. So we have to send out 250,000 multicolored forms. So yeah, a lot of this stuff becomes pretty ridiculous.
It is, and it's getting worse. And I want to move into a term called critical social justice theory, which is a term that maybe many of our audience have not heard before, but I guarantee you, you're going to hear it and see it constantly from now on. I remember when I was 6 years old and I had my first kindergarten or first grade lecture about the moon. I didn't know anything about the moon. I hadn't heard about the moon, but as soon as I was told about it in class, every time I turned around, there was something about the moon. Well, this is going to happen with critical race theory. If you haven't heard it before, you're hearing it now. I'm going to tell you a lot about it, and then you're going to hear it and see it, and you'll cringe. Basically, in its simplest form, it recognizes inequality as deeply embedded in the fabric of society. That all ties in with the whole concept of woke. People wake up to all the evil around them. It's been CRT, critical race theory, or, you know, abbreviated CRT, has been spreading throughout academia, entertainment, government, schools, and corporations. It redefines human history as a struggle between the oppressors, generally white people, and the oppressed, everybody else. Similarly to Marxism's reduction of history to a struggle between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat, it labels institutions that emerged in majority white societies as systemically or structurally racist. It isn't true, but that's what the left are calling it. The racist effort it really is, it's to divide, Tom, and conquer Americans by race, all under the guise of examining everything through the lens of racism. And of course, we hear everybody being accused of racism and fighting structural or systemic racism. It's come to be known as critical race theory, CRT. Just think of it as a half-baked pseudo-intellectual gobbledygook aimed at stirring up as much racial hatred, resentment, division, and conflict as possible. Like cult leaders, the growing overpaid legions of tax-funded experts in this area of CRT want the public to believe this is some complicated, mysterious epidemic that only overpaid experts can understand. And it's creeping into all of our schools. The premise is basically this: all white people are racist oppressors with power and privilege, and all non-white people are oppressed victims.
Yeah, that's very sad, you know, and the whole concept of systemic racism. I mean, it's interesting, in our last federal election, the leaders were incessantly bombarded with questions as to whether or not Canada was a systemic racist country. And they all agreed it was. And yet, if you actually ask, well, systemic racism, okay, that would be racism embedded in our laws. And aside from giving extra opportunity to minorities in our employment, I don't see systemic racism in Canada, quite frankly. What about you in the States?
Absolutely not. It's a made-up situation. We're accused of it. It doesn't exist. A fabulous letter appeared recently on the internet from the father of a daughter who was enrolled in a private school in New York called the Brearley School. And he objected to the fact that they were teaching critical race theory. They were accusing everybody of being systemically racist. And he wrote a brilliant letter. I advise all of our listeners to look up Andrew Gutman letter to the Brearley School on the internet. But I'll quote a paragraph from his letter. He said, "I object to the charge of systemic racism in this country at our school. Systemic racism, properly understood, is segregated schools and separate lunch counters. It is the intern of Japanese and the exterminating of Jews. Systematic racism is unequivocally not a small number of isolated incidences over a period of decades. We have not had systemic racism against Blacks in this country since the civil rights reforms of the 1960s, a period of more than 50 years ago. To state otherwise is a flat out lie, but that's what our teachers are telling us in all our schools, at all our universities. That is their mantra. And it's all part of undermining our entire nation, our freedom, our system, and eventually, Tom, installing socialism and communism." And I want to be very upfront about it. We're going to carry this discussion on beyond this week, but to next week, when we equate the woke revolution to the Bolshevik revolution of 1917, when Lenin was able to literally destroy Russia by dividing and conquering that nation.
Yeah, it makes everybody weaker and so more susceptible to being taken over, I guess.
That's exactly what it does. And Hitler did it with religion, and Lenin did it with class. And in this country now, it's being done with color.
Huh. A similar thing is happening in Canada with our school system as well. I mean, obviously we see it in the global warming issue. But in yesterday's National Post, they told a story about a Black conservative activist, blogger, and Christian who apparently caused severe harm to some students at Ambrose University in Calgary. And here is the letter of apology from the Ambrose University Student Council president. I'll just read a quote because it really just ties into this whole thing about systemic racism. "In February 2021, a guest speaker at The Well," which I guess is within the university event, "denied the existence of systemic racism and caused severe harm to those who were in attendance." This is the student council speaking. We want to make it explicitly clear that these are not the views that Ambrose Student Council wants to endorse. In a public statement issued by Ambrose University in the summer of 2020, our institution acknowledges the existence of systemic racism and its commitment to working to dismantle systems of oppression within our own system. We want to acknowledge the harm that was caused as a result of the statements made by the past guest speaker and send a sincere apology to those who have been denigrated. My goodness, they've since taken the statement off the website and put in a retraction of their apology. But regardless, it's interesting. What actually happened, Jay, is this. They had Black History Month, and this Black blogger came in and he talked via Zoom. He denied the existence, his name was Samuel Say, he denied the existence of systemic racism in a speech on biblical definitions of racism. And he actually defined racism like this. He said, racism is determined by intention, not outcome, if you go by the biblical definition. And he cited two books in the Bible arguing that, quote, Christian definition of racism is that it's partiality or bias against someone because of their skin color. And he said, it means our opinions, feelings, and experiences do not determine what's racist. Racial disparities between white people and Black people do not prove racism. Actually, you know, interesting, Jay, if you look at the NBA, that's majority Black by far, but that's not racist. It's because they're better players. You know, generally speaking, there are a lot of very good Black basketball players, and that's great. They make the NBA, but that doesn't mean it's racist. But here's what he said. He said, for there to be systemic racism, he said, there needs to be a policy or a law within a system, especially our political system, that shows partiality for white people or partiality against Black people. Absent that, there cannot be systemic racism, he says. And he said, I know of no one here today who can identify a single racist law. And yet, that was supposedly doing great harm to the students, just hearing that.
Well, you know, this has been going on at universities now for many years. Most of the universities that I'm familiar with have actually set aside safe areas on the campus where students can go and know they won't hear anything that will hurt their feelings. And like that very statement, we've been calling them snowflakes, so fragile and delicate. They go into these safe areas. And of course, we know that speaker after speaker that have been invited to university campuses, when it was learned that their position, their opinion was different than the prevailing opinion of the administration of the university, they have had their speeches canceled. This has been seen over and over again. We certainly cannot recall when we were young that we were hurt or offended by hearing something we did not agree with. But that's exactly where we are today.
Yeah, yeah. So is that what they refer to as cancel culture?
Well, it's certainly part of it. I think it's more, they have a total unwillingness to debate an acceptance of our system. They would rather cancel everything in our current world than debate with us. They don't want to hear it. They would say that the willingness to debate is actually an acceptance of our system, and they detest it. Conversation and debate are part of our game, of course, but woke folk do not want to have anything to do with our game. They think the system is rigged against them.
Huh. So they just want to tear things down.
It's a lot easier to tear things down than improve things. I mean, right now, the left is trying to destroy our society. And they're doing it in a more insidious way than most people are aware of, though they're going to become more aware. As I said, critical race theory are terms you might have not have heard before today, but everybody's going to be hearing them over and over again. And you've got to understand it's being put forth by essentially three groups of people, but we'll even talk about more than that. It's an academic education. It exists in K through 12 in the government schools, Now it is creeping into private schools. It's in virtually every university. My own university, Princeton University, is today an embarrassment to me how they've bought into lies, a picture of America that is not true. They're trying to say liberty is not the primary theme of this country. It is a sad state of affairs. In the long run, I am quite confident we're going to win the battle, but it's going to take literally millions of people to pull an oar to fight what the leftists have been able to slide under the doorway, so to speak, in recent years.
Yeah. So what do you think the average person should be doing right now besides listening to podcasts and learning about this? What should they actually do, do you think?
Well, I think if they can just internalize the idea that woke is a false statement of people waking up to reality and recognizing that the world is divided up into oppressors and oppressed, and that it's being fed to our children in our schools, our adult students in our universities, and just talk about it. I mean, everybody is talking at a social event, maybe about a sporting event they're watching, or their golf game, or their tennis game, or health problems. I think people need to turn their conversation wherever possible into informing friends who are not aware what woke is and what the critical race theory is. I think if we spread the word that this is entirely false and it's being spread essentially to destroy America and make our nation first socialist, ultimately really communist. Communism is sort of socialism light. I don't really see much difference in it, having been a student of the history of communism. I think just spreading the word is the answer to your question.
Yeah, probably calling into talk shows and not being afraid to say, for example, that Canada's first prime minister, John A. Macdonald, was a real hero. I mean, he did things that were really unusual. He had compromises established. He was the founder of our country in many ways. He got the railroad across Canada through. I mean, he really was a hero. He wasn't the perfect man, of course. But what we're hearing now across Canada, similar to the United States, is they want to tear down statues of John A. Macdonald because they say that he was instrumental in getting the residential school system going for Indigenous people. The Epoch Times had an interesting article about the Regina City Council's vote to remove John A. Macdonald's statue from a prominent city park. And it's kind of interesting because they say that the whole point of this is that Indigenous people, this is quoting from the city administrator's report, the statue makes some Indigenous people feel unwelcome in this park. It's interesting that Brian Gaisbridge, if I pronounce it correctly, he's a retired judge and senior fellow at the Frontier Center for Public Policy, a really great group that people should look up, Frontier Center for Public Policy. He said he finds the push to remove statues kind of dismaying. And he actually shows once again that the woke approach to this is actually completely wrong. He says, and I'll quote, because it's kind of interesting, very similar, I think, to what's happening with Washington and your founders. He says, one of the claims is that John A. Macdonald forced Indigenous kids to go to residential schools. Well, that's just plain false, because attendance did not become compulsory for Indigenous children until 1920. Now, remember, Canada was founded in 1867, so Macdonald was a long time before that. Before 1920, Macdonald specifically said these children should not be forced to go to the schools, because at that stage in history, it would have been simply too hard on a people who had no history of sitting in schools. And he goes on to say, many of the progressive chiefs were asking for the construction of the schools and for education, and particularly the teaching of English. And John A. Macdonald went along with them. And yet they're saying this is offensive to Indigenous people having this statue up, whereas what he did was actually a good thing at the encouragement of many of the Native tribe leaders. So I don't know. Do you have a similar thing in the U.S. where they want to pull?
Oh, absolutely. This has been replicated all over the United States. Well, start with the names of sports teams. So every college that had a name relating to an Indian tribe were forced to change their names, not by the indigenous Indians at all, but by the leftists. I mean, in vote after vote, the different teams, I think the Dakota hockey team was the Fighting Sioux. And of course, everybody knows the story of the Washington Redskins, and they're about to get rid of the Cleveland Indians name, their logo, Chief Wahoo. The Indian tribes have voted over and over again that they were honored to have the name. They were not, did not object to it, but the left forced them down. And you talk about the statues in Canada that have been pulled down. There's barely an American hero, a general or a Washington or a Lincoln or an Adams statue that has not been torn down somewhere in the United States. They find it easier to destroy than to build. Woke activists believe that they can't reorder society in the radical way they deem necessary by playing by the existing rules. It would seem tearing things down, what we call the cancel culture, and pulling down statues constitutes a system more to their liking. Apparently, they're convinced that reason, rationality, science, and evidence are very things that produced injustice in the world in the first place. The world, they think, is rigged against them. And so they nearly always seem to take a negative view toward life.
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess one of the things that average people can do is not be afraid to point out that McDonald, you know, did these different things that were great, and he really was a hero, and the same thing for Washington and other leaders, and that it's completely unrealistic to expect a person to be perfect that lived 150 years ago by today's standards. I mean, that's ridiculous. He didn't live in today's world. So, I mean, trying to judge them by today's standards doesn't really make sense, does it?
It certainly does. And that's part of their game, is rewriting history. There's something called a 1619 project. Some people may have read about that's exactly that. We no longer teach civics in our schools. The average high school student probably couldn't quickly tell you how many stars there are in the United States flag, and a smaller percentage could tell you who the governor of their state is. They know nothing about our history. And as I often say, those who are not familiar with history are committed to repeating it. And most of that are negative things. It means we're not learning from past experiences. So our education system is being destroyed brick by brick by leftists that are taking over the school system. And they're now enforcing the teaching of critical race theory, the teaching of being woke in schools to young children with incredibly impressionable minds.
Huh. This sounds like some sort of extreme religion, I find. You know, this unwillingness to debate their fundamental premises at all. It sounds to me like very much a religion. What do you think?
I don't think there's any question about it. Religion is not based on facts. It's based on belief. You take things on faith, and that's what the woke people and the critical race theory people and what they're teaching, to use the same kind of terminology that everybody agrees that the white man, the people from Europe that settled the country, were evil, were racist. They use all kinds of terrible terms to describe them, and it just is not true. So yes, Tom, it clearly takes the form of a religion.
Well, you know, in our second half of our show, because we have to go to a break now, we're going to talk a little more about the sports woke thing that's going on, and in particular, what's happening in the NBA. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.
The cancel culture is determined to destroy our history, bringing violence and terror to city streets. America Out Loud will enhance its own message of love and honor for the American traditions and constitutional values that have always been the backbone of what America means: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Jay, we were talking before the break about how sports is actually being overwhelmed by a woke mentality. And you know, it's interesting, the American sports journalist, Clay Travis, he points out that 37 million people watch game 6 of the Chicago Bulls versus the Utah Jazz NBA Finals in 1998. And I'm not surprised to hear that because there's only a couple of teams that actually had a winning record against the Bulls when Michael Jordan was playing. And one of them, believe it or not, was the Jazz. The Utah Jazz won more games against Michael Jordan's Bulls than he won against them, although he won when it really mattered, like in the NBA Finals. So that's an interesting sort of factoid that the Jazz were a team that actually beat Jordan more than he beat them. But regardless, 37 million people watched that game, okay? Now, how many watched LeBron James and the Lakers play against the Heat in Game 6 of 2020? Well, it was 7 million. So that's a decline of 30 million people in viewership at the same time that the U.S. population is increased by 50 million. Okay, and here's a quote from Clay Travis, the American sports journalist. He says, almost more people watched the documentary about Michael Jordan, remember The Last Dance on Netflix, very good film. It's actually a 10-part series. Almost more people watched that about Michael Jordan and the Bulls in the 90s than watched the NBA Finals with LeBron James and the Lakers against the Heat in 2020. He says people like the Jordan era Bulls so much more than they like LeBron, that they were more interested in watching a documentary on ESPN about a team that was playing 20 plus years ago than they were actually watching LeBron James and the Lakers play against the Heat real time on ABC. And apparently it was free as well. And he was speculating, and I think this makes a lot of sense because it kind of turns my stomach when I hear this. He was speculating the incessant lecturing of woke politics during NBA broadcasts has turned off a large portion of the league's fan base. And, you know, they put these silly things on the back of their jerseys and all this woke. Do you think that's why, part of the reason why, Jay, people are not watching NBA broadcasts anywhere near as much as they used to?
I don't think there's any question about it. And I could not be more delighted. And I really became a fan of Michael Jordan later in his career for a number of reasons. I guess one was that he quit basketball and tried to play baseball, did the best he could, found out that hitting a baseball may be the most difficult thing in sports. So he tried for a while and then went back and played great again. But more importantly, I was always impressed with the fact that he was a Black athlete that did not make political statements for two reasons. One, I mean, he's not an expert on politics and didn't think particularly that his opinion mattered. But more importantly, for a commercial reason, he is quoted as saying, why would I want to cut in half the number of people that would buy my sneakers? I mean, by declaring himself, as so many of them do today, where their politics are, if they make part of their income by selling shoes with their name on them, they're going to lose those people. And I've always respected him for that. And he's maintained it. He's still very involved in the NBA. He owns a team and he just doesn't get involved in it. Where, of course, LeBron James is, if nothing else, all about politics, and it's very annoying. And I'm delighted that their fandom has dropped dramatically.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting, recently LeBron James was saying that he was the greatest player of all time, the GOAT, greatest of all time. And they asked Jordan about it, and he was actually quite humble. It was kind of interesting. He said, well, you know, there's lots of people, Jerry West, you know, Lou Alcindor, later Abdul Karim Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, these people played in different eras. I mean, you can't really compare them. So, I mean, I was actually quite impressed. Jordan, who's certainly not lacking in self-confidence, he wouldn't call himself the GOAT, you know? So I think he showed a certain degree of humility. You know, Jay, we often hear how sports teams are bowing to various politically correct causes. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm a major sports fan, and I watch so many hockey games and football games, college basketball games. And you're absolutely right. From the announcers on down to the banners in the stadiums, they have become very, very political. There's probably a Black Lives Matter banner hanging in every NBA stadium, in every hockey rink as well. And it's really unfortunate. If you dig down, you will find out that Black Lives Matter is a communist-inspired organization. I got a kick out of the fact that the woman who organized BLM in the last 6 weeks has bought three separate homes valued at over $2 million in white neighborhoods. The hypocrisy is absolutely rampant. It's everywhere. In the NFL, they've kind of conquered it. I was going to give up the NFL with not standing at the national anthem, but I really am not a supporter of the $40 million salary that the leader, Roger Goodell, gets. But he did salvage an entire season among sports that were destroyed by the pandemic. They really did away with people not standing for the national anthem, and they were fairly careful about who had to wear masks and who didn't. And they got through a whole a season without a lost game. So it was quite amazing. On the other side of the coin, as we said earlier, the National Basketball Association is losing fans over and over again. And I'm delighted. They're not there. And it's because people are tired of the politics that are being brought into sports. There just isn't any question about it. They're doing themselves a lot of harm. And I don't mind it, because it shows that there are a lot of people that totally agree with you and I, Tom, that politics does not belong in sports.
You know, Jay, one other thing that we hear is that the NBA are so concerned about not offending the Communist Party of China. And you might remember, was it the owner of the Houston Rockets that actually tweeted some support for the oppressed people of Hong Kong? And oh my goodness, that caused a big reaction from China. You think the NBA are being a little overly cautious about the Communist Party of China?
Well, I would go a lot further than that. It was the general manager of the Houston Rockets that made a comment in support of what was going on in Hong Kong, where they were losing their rights and their freedoms. And he was not fired, but he was severely reprimanded by the league. But there isn't any question the NBA is far more interested in shoe sales in China than in freedom in the United States. So they have totally kowtowed to China. They also have a tremendous number of viewers there. It's absolutely a disgrace. Well, I mean, isn't that true of our entire government? The Biden administration is nuzzling up to China in every possible way. And it's happening at the worst possible time. China is moving into this country, as most people don't recognize. They're buying businesses. The first one was the Smithfield Farms. They bought them for $4.7 billion. And now they employ more hog farmers in the United States. Actually, they own hundreds of farms outright. And there are many rural communities that are going to be totally beholden to China for their employment. The Biden administration loves China. They've done business there personally with Hunter Biden and with our president, and it's only going to get worse. Now, I want to say I remain optimistic. I'm saying a lot of negative things here, but I am so confident that 18 months from now, when we get to the election of November 2022, the vast majority of Americans are going to be so offended by so many things going on, they are not going to be voting for the congressmen that have a D next to their name or the senators. So I cannot imagine not overturning the Congress and putting it in more conservative hands. And while President Biden would still have a couple years to go if he is still in office and his vice president hasn't taken over, which many people think will happen. I hope it doesn't. He's, I think, much less harmful than she is. But without the support of the Senate and the House, he is not going to be able to continue doing the insane things that he's literally doing daily. People are going to see their energy bills go up. They're going to see their freedoms reduced, and they're going to get annoyed. And I don't think they can control 500 election districts the way they controlled six states in the last election. So long term, I'm very optimistic, but I think it's good that we understand all the terrible things that are going on right now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really great to see Epoch Times and a fair number of media outlets actually reporting on this properly. And I'd like to read a quote from the April 12th issue of Epoch Times, Michael Walsh. He says that progressivism is a destructive philosophy of resentful losers, matters nothing to them when their blood is up. That social justice is just another word for punitive fascism thrills them to the bone. That if the word justice needs a modifier, it's not justice at all, but revenge is the whole point. In the end stage lives of peoples and cultures, even nations, a suicidal impulse to destroy becomes even more powerful than the urge to create. So, Jay, you know, when I see things like that, I mean, it's obviously a bad thing he's describing, but the very fact that Epoch Times and Fox News and various other media outlets are now saying these things straightforward, I mean, they're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, that is a really good thing, don't you think?
Absolutely. And while we don't have a paid commercial for Epoch Times, I couldn't more strongly recommend that our listeners subscribe. It's a weekly publication, the publishers of which all came from communist countries and really experienced devastation and lack of liberty. And they've started a newspaper that clearly has a conservative bent, but very balanced. It's not only the news of the week, which I've always felt is all you need. It's not, you don't need the news by the hour of the day. The news of the week is fine, but there's just tremendous amount of human interest stuff, a lot of philosophy. And if you want to learn regularly about what's going on with wokeism and with critical race theory, their articles are absolutely fabulous. One of their writers, who is from your country, a Canadian, Conrad Black, has been a major financial person and writer in Canada. He said, it is now clear that as the avalanche of wokeness and national self-hate has crashed over the restraining walls of the American mythos, one pillar of traditional American democracy after another has fallen. I'm going to repeat it one more time. It is now clear that as the avalanche of wokeness and national self-hate has crashed over the restraining walls of the American mythos, one pillar of traditional American democracy after another has fallen. That is exactly the case. And Epoch Times has editorial after editorial talking about it. Things are, as I said, I'm optimistic. I'm glad Biden and his people won. They cheated to one, but they have dug a hole from which now people will recognize. They now have enough rope to hang themselves. I am quite confident that in the end, the next 18 months, the end of 2 years of his term, they will have done more destruction to their party than they will have to this nation. Brings me to another topic I want to talk about, and that's the way major businesses, industry, have fallen in line with all of this terribleness. We used to be able to count on the chambers of commerce and the CEOs of our major industry to remain conservative and not buy into the lines put forth by the socialists. That doesn't seem to be true anymore. Are you seeing that in Canada, Tom?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, these banks and all sorts of things are going along and promoting the climate scare. Oh, my goodness, you know, we have to stop climate change. And, you know, I mean, it's all pretty ridiculous and actually very damaging. You know, Jay, and to end off this half of our show, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about woke science. I mean, the whole idea that science becomes woke. I mean, what is it, like data-free science? What is woke science?
You know, Tom, your term data-free science is a really good one. I've not heard it before, and I'll repeat it, because that is the way they accept science. They pull things out of thin air without requiring any kind of detailed visual observation. In science, the scientific method is that you come up with a theory or a hypothesis as how you think something works in the world. And then you either test the theory or you attempt to gather data, actual physical facts that will support your theory. That is not the way woke science is done, or alarmist science is done, or socialist science is done. They literally create their own numbers. People know, or should know by now, what a mathematical model is. It's an equation with variables in it that churns out an answer. And the only evidence, well, it's not evidence, the only support the alarmists have for man-caused climate change is an equation that they created with variables that they guess the numbers at, and then they come up with an answer and tell you what the temperature is going to be a decade or a century from now. Again, it is data-less science. You really coined a terrific term there. And then they then go and say it's equivocal, or that everybody agrees with it. And we've already talked last week about the fact that consensus has no place in science. It doesn't matter how many people think something is true. You've got to prove it with physical data.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, Jay, that Le Figaro, which is a media outlet, I presume, in France, they were talking about the record cold in Europe. And they actually identified a climate researcher who told us that the record cold was being caused by global warming through a complicated explanation. You know, Jay, it also applies to the whole issue of lockdowns and COVID and stuff. And I just read some statistics here. Strict lockdown states like New York has had 2,500 deaths per million as of the writing of this article. New Jersey was 2,800, Illinois is 1,878, Michigan 1,759. Now, those were strict lockdown states, but wide open states like Florida had less, 1,584, Texas 1,705. So, you know, where's the actual data that shows that the lockdowns are actually worthwhile? I mean, they do have an impact, that's for sure, on the unemployment rate, you know, 13% in New York City in comparison with 4.8 in Florida. But I mean, where's the data to support the lockdowns that are being imposed on us all over the place?
Well, clearly, Tom, there is no data whatsoever. And everything the government has really done has been to get the population used to conforming. That's all part of moving us to a socialist, communist situation. Get us to conform, and then people are used to taking orders from the government. And pretty much everything they've done is wrong. The masks have been of questionable value. The 6-foot distancing has been of questionable value. And one of the most interesting statistics has been in looking at the total number of deaths from year to year going back to 2017, 18, 19, the number of deaths in 2020 was only 56,000 more deaths in the United States than there were in the previous year where there was no pandemic. The crux of how serious the whole situation has been has not been near as bad as people are made to think. And as you point out, the unemployment, the destruction of businesses, the depression from being locked in, everything that happened has been bad. It's fairly easy to say the government hasn't done much right, but the states that were the most open have certainly fared better, Florida and Texas as good examples.
Yeah. Now, on the mask issue, you were at a conference for the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness in Las Vegas about a half a year ago or so. Were those doctors themselves wearing the masks when they were in their meetings?
Tom, there were I gave a lecture at the conference with Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. It was held in Las Vegas last August. There were 100 attendees. I was asked to give a lecture at the conference, and there was not a single doctor in the room wearing a mask. The hotel forced us to wear masks in the public areas so they didn't lose their gambling license, which was actually threatened by the governor of Nevada. But not one wore a mask, and three of the lectures that were given were actually on the efficacy of the mask. And all of them, with data, not opinion, was able to show that the masks were virtually of no use at all. I remember well a woman, a surgeon, that always wore a mask in the surgery room, but not to protect the patient from any germs getting through the mask. It was to make sure that she did not drool into an open wound, and she laughed about the uselessness of the mask to prevent the China virus from moving from one person to another.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what then is the mechanism by which the virus spreads? Is it through contact, through surfaces? Is that the main method for spreading the disease?
Well, I cannot speak with real expertise in it, but it certainly does appear that it is airborne. Mm-hmm. But I've not read anything where it is actually a surface, but it remotely airborne is what it's mostly thought of. But there have been so many mistakes, it's terrible. It's a shame it's still not over. And now, of course, we're facing another possible loss of liberty. There are some states that are really going to require a vaccine passport. Now, I really believe in the vaccine. I have many friends that don't want to take it. They feel it's experimental. I think it's something that people should take. I'm certainly glad that my family has taken the vaccine, but I am concerned about requiring a vaccine to move about in many situations.
Yeah, like on airplanes. Well, you know, Jay, to end off on a bit of a positive note, I should tell you about an article I was reading last night in a very recent issue of the Epoch Times. They were saying that conservatives and liberals used to work together for the benefit of the country. I mean, there was obviously a tension and a conflict between them, but generally speaking, they could work together. But that the liberals have actually allied themselves with Marxists now and are being pulled farther and farther left into a very quite extreme socialist point of view, and how this is going to really hurt them. Now, it strikes me that if they get massacred in the next election, don't you think there's a good chance that they may say, whoa, like these Marxists are getting us into a lot of trouble, like let's back off that. So isn't there a chance that following the next election, we may see more cooperation between the liberals and the conservatives, simply because going so far as appeasing the Marxists will be a disaster for the Democrats?
Well, it's devoutly to be wished, but I think the more we tie Marxist theology to liberals, the better off we are, because that's really what they are. I'm very happy to be fairly confident that only 15% of our population are radical leftist Marxists. They are very vocal. They own the media. They buy their ink by the barrel, and they give the impression to the rest of us in America that they are overrunning us. That isn't true. It's just that they hold the wheel of directing the country where we hear and we see so much. I think 85% of this nation does not want to be socialist, does not want to be driven by Marxist theology. And so there is, let's say, a percentage of people that are not radical leftists, but are quite liberal, that will follow the path that you've described and will move more over to a neutral position. They may not become conservatives, but they will not be Marxist liberals.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, next week we'll be talking about how, taken to its extreme, the woke approach will bring us to communism and what communism is and extreme socialism is, how it provides only misery and death historically. So tune in next week for our description of how wokeism is taking us in this nasty direction. So thanks for listening in today. So this is Tom Harris and Jay Lear signing out from The Other Side of the Story.